This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of July 29th, 2019. I'm Mason King.
Welcome to the Bushwood Country Club. The membership's exclusive.
You think I'd join this crummy snobatorium?
The help is outrageous. The madness is contagious.
Bad language, fooling around on the course, poor caddying.
What is whole place?
Well, in case you didn't get the reference to Bushwood Country Club or recognize Rodney Dangerfield there, that was the trailer for Caddyshack in 1980. The movie is still the gold standard for the slobs versus snobs genre, and it gleefully skewered the stereotype of country clubs as stuffy havens for the idle rich. And that's a cliche that to some degree still sticks, especially for the world's have-nots. After a construction boom in the early 2000s and then the recession, the golf and country club industry weathered a shakeout. And one of the keys to future survival is convincing millennials, who, stereotypically, aren't seen as joiners or fans of old institutions, to become members. And for a large swath of the industry, including many clubs in the Indianapolis area, that has meant significant changes in amenities and attitudes at clubs, as well as a shift in how they do business. So with me in the studio is reporter Sam Quinn, who has written a story in the latest IBJ about how local clubs are trying to attract younger members. Sam, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And with us via phone from Alexandria, Virginia, is Jeff Morgan. He's the president and CEO of the Club Management Association of America. Thanks for making time for us today, Jeff.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me.
Sure. And before we get started, I want to give just some quick context on the Club Managers Association. I believe it is the largest professional association for managers of membership clubs. It has about 6,800 members who represent more than 2,500 country clubs, golf clubs, athletic, city, faculty, military, town, and yacht clubs. Is that right?
That's correct. We cover any sort of club.
And let's define millennial, which is a dangerous thing to do. But in the context of this conversation, let's say that we are talking about adults who are younger than 40. Is that how you guys generally refer to them?
Yeah, we usually look 35, but I think 40 is fine too.
So let's jump right into it. Jeff, for golf and country clubs, how pressing is the need to recruit millennial members? Is this like a life or death proposition right now?
Country clubs used to be in a time period where everybody had waiting lists, and now those times have gone. So pretty much all but a less than 10% of clubs are in the process of recruiting new members because we're a much more transient society and things change, so people are in and out of clubs. So therefore, when you're recruiting new members, you're always looking for, chances are you're looking for younger members. So whether they're millennials or Gen X, we always are watching the age in our club, the average age, and always trying to bring that down. So yes, millennials are a focus area, probably, as are Gen X, but millennials are definitely a focus area for clubs.
And what is the trend in golf and country club membership in the last 20 years? I see this stated a lot of different ways, but the general vibe is that it has been on the decline.
So golf and country clubs were overbuilt really in the Tiger Woods era, and the number of golfers versus the number of clubs and courses just did not equate. And there was this big blip and everybody built up for it. And it was a lot of developer building. And so that has been declining really since the Tiger Woods era was when he was at his height, and has come down to a norm now to where we have new clubs that are coming into being, or new courses that are coming into being, as well as some going out of existence and being sold to developers because the property is too valuable. You know, the good thing is the trend, in fact, this past year has turned to where there's more golfers golfing. And if you look at kids that are learning golf, there's a huge influx and a huge blip up on younger kids playing golf. So I think golf is, has a good future. You know, we're just in this area right now where we've had this leveling out over the past few years, and now we're back to a norm where you'll see a modest increase every year.
Oh, okay, so there's an equilibrium membership-wise in the number of clubs.
Correct.
Okay. So we'll get to golf here in a second because I think that's fascinating. But let me again go back to millennials. The conventional wisdom on the millennials, which I think you're familiar with, is that they're not joiners, right? Their finances are burdened by student debt, and what they value above everything else are authentic, unique experiences. Now, based on that, it sounds like a country club might be a tough sell, but your research says that they do want to join clubs. Why is that?
Yeah, well, that's really what it is they want the experience. They like what clubs have to offer in that closed environment. But in just the way baby boomers came into clubs and changed clubs, millennials are coming into changing clubs too. They want very much child-centered activities. They want the club to be sort of everything that they want in their environment. So they want sport and health. They want social activities. They want activities to take care of their children and for their children to grow up in the club. They want excellent service, and they want to be in an environment that they can bring their friends, and their friends can say, wow, you're a member of a club. Isn't this cool? So there is that experience that a club has that you just can't get if you're not a member.
Now, Sam, you spoke with the managers of several Indianapolis area country clubs, including Highland and Meridian Hills and Broadmoor and Woodstock. Are they trying to do this? Are they trying to attract millennials?
Yeah, definitely. And they're seeing increases in the number of millennials joining their clubs from the numbers they shared with me. But everything from, a college night by the pool that has beer pong and food like sliders that would be, appealing to millennials is what they're trying to offer. New fitness classes, anything that, people in that age group are going to enjoy. Bocce ball is really popular.
Bocce ball.
Yep, which I was like, what? But it is. And then also paddle tennis is apparently very, very popular, and as well as pickleball, which I think you see sort of everywhere that's kind of growing.
Yeah, just out of nowhere, I feel like the last couple of years, everyone's talking about pickleball.
Yeah, cities have it, golf courses or country clubs have it, so pickleball is definitely an interesting one.
And Jeff mentioned kind of the primacy of kids that, I mean, they're really interested in appealing to families. What kinds of things, what kind of examples can they give me of what local clubs are doing?
So Highland actually has a 6-week long summer camp geared for children. I forget what it's called off the top of my head, but Camp Highland. And they have things like swimming, golf, tennis, probably pickleball, if that's growing in popularity there, that the kids can go and participate in for those 6 weeks. All of the clubs also have swim teams for children, for teenagers, and they compete against each other, which I thought was really interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but yep, it's a competition. So just things like that, and then also designing the club to be a little bit more friendly to families and children.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that Meridian Hills, for example, is rearranging as a dining room to make some space.
Yeah, they've set aside some dining rooms for age-specific kids.
Oh,
so,
really?
Maybe 10 to 12-year-olds are in a room, and so that there's food that's geared toward their taste. It's not as decorated or fancy as some of the other dining rooms for adults.
So, Jeff, is this consistent with what you've seen?
You sound like a commercial for CMAA because you're saying exactly all the things that are happening. And some things that I would add is cornhole. We think of cornhole in our backyard at the beach, but that has become a very social game at clubs, as is bocce. And part of the reason these are becoming so popular is you can have food and drink. And you're not just playing against each other, you're playing with people. And that social aspect is something that is extremely, extremely important for younger and younger generations. The casual dining that you mentioned and the change away from formal dining to family dining is important. One of the other things that we see a lot is clubs doing babysitting.
Yeah. Hmm.
And depending upon the state regulations, you may come in and drop your kids off and then stay at the club. In some states, you can actually leave, and some of these clubs have licensed babysitting to where they can watch your kids, and you and your spouse could go off campus, for instance, or out of the club to a restaurant or an event. And, it's interesting to watch some of the clubs that I go through, their fitness centers. One of the channels in their television channels in the fitness center is watching the kids in the kids center. So you can go and exercise, but yet see your kids right there, much in the same way you would want to be able to monitor your kids, you know, whatever age they are. So all of this is being pushed by, you know, a younger and younger member wanting different things, and that family is oh so critical.
Now, Jeff, how are millennials different from the previous generations in their interests and even their attitudes towards country club?
Well, I would say that, you know, if you think of, you know, the movie Caddyshack is probably the place to start with. And if you go back to that Caddyshack sort of era 20 years ago, you know, clubs were a place where, you know, usually the man went in a relationship and it was his place to escape. That really changed with the baby boomers. And it, you know, over the past 15 years, it's become much more male and female. And now we're seeing, no, it's not just the male, the adults, it's really the whole family. So, you know, I think millennials, you know, Gen X and had an impact on that, and millennials are really pushing that because, you know, they see the club, you know, they see that their money, as you mentioned, is limited because of student debt and other things. So when they pay for something, being a club, they want to make sure it fits all their needs. So the expectation on a club is very high in fitting, you know, we have our work, we have our home, and we have our club, or that third place where we can go that really rounds out everything we do as a lifestyle.
Now, I am not personally a country club member, but I am country club adjacent in that several members of my family do belong to actually several clubs. Well, that came out kind of funny, didn't it?
Yeah.
Sounds like I'm really secretly rich, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's not true. But I know, for example, that Woodstock is adding on to its clubhouse. Sam, you reported that Highland actually has renovated its entire facility.
Yeah, over the last couple of years they have, just to give it updates, they've added a, they refer to it as an indoor golf short course, which I guess just allows you to golf all year round. So you can go out to, you know, the country club in February and golf there, even though you probably wouldn't want to be out on the green golfing. So, but also Broadmoor renovated its dining room and its pool, and the renovations really sought to make it more vibrant, less stiff, because that's sort of what millennials are looking for.
Jeff, is this pretty common, renovations and construction projects?
It is. I mean, we went through a bit of a quiet period in the recession back 10, 12 years ago. But over the past 5 years, money has been much more freely available.
Mm-hmm.
Clubs have been doing a lot of renovation in all those areas you mentioned. Clubhouse, golf, and what you mentioned was a lot of, you know, we don't necessarily have time to spend 4 to 5 hours golfing, so how can we spend an hour and have a golf experience? So practice ranges and simulators and new putting greens and all that have been added. Informal dining has been another area, and fitness is another area that we've seen a lot of capital spending in clubs going on.
Now, my understanding of this is, I mean, the members have to pay for something like this. How much are they usually willing to invest in a project?
Well, that's,
I mean, partly given the size of the club, probably has something to do with it.
Yeah, it's largely based upon size, and, you know, members have a vote, and so this has to be voted on because it's a membership club. So part of your board's responsibility is to put forward, this is what we want to do, this is, the members have said, yes, this is what we want to do, and here's what it's going to cost. Now, years ago, clubs would not take on debt. They would usually do it through an assessment. And now what we're seeing is clubs taking debt on and doing these projects, and then you might pay your regular dues and then some sort of capital piece on a monthly basis to pay that back. So there's lots of different financing ways to do capital expansion, and part of that is just generated on money is much more freely available right now, and clubs are taking advantage of that.
All right. Hey, let's take a quick break. I think we're rounding the turn here in our conversation. So let's hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is sponsored by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients, committed to each other and to every client. Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com.
Okay, we're back with this week's IBJ podcast. I'm Mason King, and I'm talking with reporter Sam Quinn and Jeff Morgan, CEO of the Club Management Association of America, about how golf and country clubs are changing to attract younger members. Jeff, what are you seeing as the biggest barrier when trying to attract a millennial? The most common reason why they would shake their head and say, yeah, I'm not interested.
It's perception. I think when most of us think of a country club, we think of those high wealth individuals, those snobby individuals that, is that image created by Caddyshack and some of these movies and just on our perceptions over time. And really clubs have done a lot to pull the walls down, and to let the public see in the club and really be part of the community. But that perception we're always fighting. And I think, it's something that we'll continue to fight. But the nice thing is with millennial members is word of mouth is so strong that, as people have good experiences in clubs as a guest or as a member, I think that's going to generate, new folks having an interest in the club.
Yeah, I've received some pitches over the years. And the problem for me has always been cost. Are country clubs doing things now to either soften the burden or to redistribute the burden for people like me who just can't see past that first big payment?
Well, so from an initial, there's sort of two pieces to club membership, initiation fee as well as monthly membership. So the median average or the median initiation fee in the U.S. is $9,000, with the average about $25,000, which is either number is a lot of money. So clubs are doing that over a 3-year period or a 5-year period to pay that. We're also doing, clubs are doing, to have really changed their membership model. So maybe as a under 30 member, you might come in at X, and then when you hit 30, the dues go up and you might pay a smaller initiation fee, and then that's stepped up. So where your full initiation fee is covered by the time you're 40 or something like that.
Sam, what have you seen locally?
Yeah, so they definitely recognize that millennials don't have the disposable income that generations before us did. Like you said, we have student loan debt, lots of things we're balancing. So at Highland and most of the country clubs around here, you can join if you're under 39 or whatever age they pick, maybe it's 35. And get a discounted price, not only on your initiation fee, but also that monthly due. So for someone, who joins Highland before they're 30, they're paying $337 a month and a $1,500 initiation fee. And that kind of goes up as you get older. Eventually, they do have to go ahead and transfer to a regular Class A membership and pay for a stock certificate to be a full member and be able to vote. But that's what I'm seeing across the board. Meridian Hills gives people until they're 40 to start paying that initiation fee. They do have to put down some sort of deposit, but theirs I think is almost $40,000, so it's really high for someone who's my age and thinking about, that's the cost of my car. So $40,000 is a lot of money to have at one time.
Yeah, that's half my mortgage.
And then Woodstock Country Club actually has this legacy program, and they say that's kind of how they've drawn in more millennials. If your grandparents or your parents are a member, you get to join for 50% of that cost. So, that makes it a lot more affordable.
Hey, Jeff, when someone pays an initiation fee, what is that for?
So there's two different types of clubs. In a member-owned club that's owned by the members, that initiation fee is used to help. It ultimately, for many clubs, it may be refundable, it may not be refundable. And depending upon what the club wants to do, oftentimes that is sort of the capital contribution, thinking that all the members built this beforehand, so this is your payment to help you get in and helps to continue to grow sort of the fixed assets of the club. So it's done in different ways. And then there's clubs that are not a nonprofit model that are owned by a company, and that would then go to the bottom line of the company, for the same reasons.
And then the monthly dues are an annual fee that is just to maintain.
Yeah, so the dues are for all the amenities that you're getting, whether it's golf course, swimming pool, so you're paying for all the staff, all the lifeguards, all the chemicals that go everywhere, all the cutting of everything, and you're paying for that upkeep of the environment.
And I take it that I can have like a different kinds of membership. If I wanted just to have a golf membership, for example, I could do that. Or if I didn't want to play golf, I could have, do they call it a social membership, I think?
Yep. So many membership, many clubs have full members that have rights to all amenities, including golf, for instance, and others have social members where you're only entitled to social activities. And then there may be, you know, there's lots of different membership categories. Probably another common one is a non-resident member, to where you may only come in and live in that area a few times a year. Your kids are going to college and you want to have access to a club while the kids are going to college.
Now, we touched on this a little bit, but the level of importance of golf. Are country clubs now leaning less on golf, or are millennials just viewing golf as less important as previous generations?
So in the evolution of clubs, and particularly country clubs, since the definition of a country club usually has a golf course as part of it, the growth of golf, as far as that amenity itself, where that growth is on providing things around golf through the short game, so practice area, simulator to where you can play golf when the weather may not be good. But the actual golf course itself is a fixed asset that probably is not going to evolve much other than upkeep of it. But the calling from the members for what they want is everything else around other than golf. So it's new, it's kids' activities, it's fitness and wellness and classes and things like that. It's casual dining. It's upgrades to the swimming pool to make it more like a resort where you have mushrooms that push out water, you know, and kids can run around. And so golf is still a very much a core asset of a club, but the growth side of a club is everything, is largely everything else.
I have to ask about food real quick. Are menus changing? I mean, I would assume they would be maybe putting, how everyone is turned into a foodie, they're putting a lot more emphasis on food.
Yeah, so it's changing in a couple ways. It used to be clubs, you had to wear a suit, and it was very formal dining, and that largely has gone away. Not to say that some clubs may not have a formal dining area, because the members still want that. But usually part of your dues goes to support that food operation. So, you know, and generally, when you go to a club, you're getting a better meal, a better quality meal, than you would in your local restaurant for a very reasonable price. And in fact, clubs will watch that 10 to 15 mile radius around, or 5 mile radius around their club, and really look at all the restaurants and all the food options and want to make sure that you have a unique experience when you're coming into the club. Mm. Now that's to say, when a family environment, you know, there may be grab-and-go type food as well as casual dining and formal dining. And then some of the events that a club may do, there may be a wine dinner that is very high-end and very special, that you're having wines that you can only get from the club because of the access the club has. So food is important, and food is part of that experience.
Well, great. Well, this has been a great conversation, guys. Jeff, thank you so much for your help today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Happy to help.
Hey, my thanks again to Sam Quinn and Jeff Morgan. Again, you can read Sam's story in this week's edition of IBJ. And I wanted to draw your attention also to a couple of other stories in the paper. John Russell reports that private addiction treatment centers are springing up across central Indiana, with out-of-state companies spending millions of dollars in the race to treat people with substance abuse disorders. And in many cases, they are opening high-end facilities in wealthy neighborhoods and refusing low-income Medicaid patients in favor of those with higher-paying private insurance plans. Also in this week's paper, Sorrell Groh explains how U.S. Senator Todd Young of Indiana has become a crusader for raising the minimum age for buying tobacco at 21. The issue might not seem like a natural fit for Young, but he says he feels a moral imperative to act. You can find these stories in the copy of IBJ that you undoubtedly have delivered to your home or office, or online at IBJ.com. And remember that for full and unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content, just hit the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time for the IBJ podcast. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.